Welcome to another episode of Reckless Atalk, our TTRPG interview show, where we sit down with some of our favorite writers, players, GMs, and streamers to get to know a little bit more about what makes them who they are. I am, as always, your host, GM Nathan. I use he, him pronouns. And this week, we are joined by a really special guest who essentially excels at every aspect of TTRPG performance and production, Eli, aka A Ghost of Eli from Mayday Roleplay. Eli was an early connection that we made in the TTRPG space and immediately stood out for their abilities and instincts as a performer and professional sound designer and editor. And over the years since, he has been a really wonderful force for good in the space, further cementing my admiration of her. This is such a great episode, especially for those of us who are trying to balance our creative work with life, friendship, burnout, and the general weight of being. Eli and I chat about the editing process, collaboration, peer and community building, making your process sustainable, identity, and oh, so much more. Eli is genuinely one of my favorite folks, and I think you'll enjoy your time with her as much as I did. As always, if you enjoy this episode, please go check out some of our other Reckless Atalk interviews and maybe even our actual play episodes. We have links to the things that Eli and I talk about in the show notes, including to the always excellent shows over at Mayday Roleplay, as well as his game design work. With that, thanks for listening. Eli, hello.
Ah, hi. Hello. Good morning.
I appreciate you playing with the bit of like, I just was a window that like popped up on your computer and it was just like, hi, you. And that you were startled, but still welcoming of my sudden appearance.
Hell yeah. I commit to this bit.
Yes. And that's what I appreciate about you. Thank you. One of the many, many reasons that I am overjoyed to be talking to you here today. Thank you. Thank you for joining.
Hell yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. It's been a while since I've seen your face. And two, it's just good to be able to hang out with you in general. So this is just an excellent cross for my what is today? Wednesday. My Wednesday morning. whatever day it is.
Whatever it is. Yeah, it's nothing matters, time is fake, etc. But no, I mean, that's why I started Reckless Atalks. Like, it's good for like learning about art and about spotlighting cool people and blah, 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 and networking. But mostly it's like I get to invite the cool people who I just can't talk to if we're not making content together. And I can be like, Wednesday is the day I'm hanging out with Eli. That's that. Period. But hey, Eli.
Yes.
For those who might be listening, who are not me, who do not understand why they should also be thrilled and excited to be hanging out with you here on whatever day they happen to be listening to it, could you please tell our dear listeners who you are, what you do, what they might know you from, all that good stuff?
My name is Eli. I also go by A Ghost of Eli on socials and all throughout the universe. I go by any and all pronouns, and I am the resident ghost of Mayday Roleplay, and we're an AP content creation team. We make sad boy things all the time, whether it be horror or drama or fantasy, that's what we do. I do the editorial there, as well as I perform and play and GM. And when I'm not doing that, I'm out in the TTRPG space doing a variety of stuff, like making games and writing supplements and I got
anything that can be done in tabletop games for the most part. I think you have done, are doing, etc.
Yeah, I've dabbled everywhere. I like having all those slashes in my bio where I like max out my bio like word count.
Yes, exactly. I'm gonna have to change some font sizes, I think, for the promo images for this.
Yeah, we're gonna have to condense it a little bit.
And I'm thrilled to do it. So I know that you started relatively recently. That's 5 years ago or whatever, I think, in like 2019 or whatever. Right,
time is stretching. We've been doing this for a minute.
Misery. But you are actively and have done a great number of TTRPG stuff, specifically in the public sphere. But that's not where we start, Eli. We start we start at the core of what took normal everyday Eli and blossomed him into the current tabletop public powerhouse that you are today. So where did you kind of get first introduced to the idea of tabletop role-playing games and kind of start in that world? Or I guess just kind of where did your nerdy pursuits and interests begin? Whatever is kind of truest to your own personal journey.
I tell everybody, because I started tabletop in 2019, like literally right before all of everything that happened after 2019 went down.
The things happened. The things.
We all know the things. We were all a part of this. We're all a part of this timeline. So getting into like D&D in 2019 was kind of the start of the TTRPG era of my life. But I always tell people that like the nerdy role-playing side of what I was doing started well before that, because I did a lot of play-by-post and a lot of forum-based role-playing beforehand. I was a child of Tumblr in the early days of Tumblr, making characters and spending hours writing stories with random people on the internet. But that's kind of where I started all of that stuff. And then eventually in my adult life, I eventually stopped doing that because I got busy with doing career stuff, and then somehow full circle came back to tabletop. Where I found a home group that I was really enjoyed playing with, a wonderful group of people that we even during the pandemic got to play for as long as we can until life got in the way, as always with all TTRPG groups. But then I found Mayday, and I've been doing it ever since. And I hang out with five other goobers all day every day, and we've kind of like been able to build content, but also play amazing games all the time. It's now my life.
Yes, there's, especially for you guys, there's all like it's every week there's, you know, games going. And I think each system only usually lasts what, like 10 to 20 max episodes.
Something so
you're
like
always
that.
Rotating. You're always doing new stories, new campaigns, new systems, whatever.
Yeah.
So you are well steeped in tabletop.
Yeah. And now like in 2025, we're entering our home game era as well. So on top of playing games for other people to enjoy, we are also intending to play games for ourselves. So,
what?
You know, yeah. Right. Right. We're all
that
like,
that sounds fake. I don't think that's. No, like, I don't think you can. I don't think that's legal. I think you should get that checked out, like at least what your local state laws or something. Because
I didn't think it was real until we had the session zeros. And I was like, wow, we really are going to be playing games at home. Amazing. I can't wait. So
as human beings and not products to be put out towards other people.
Exactly.
Seems, again, we'll see. That's an interesting take, but I don't know. But, you know, let's talk about that a little bit, I guess. So one of my favorite questions in Reckless to Talk is figuring out what prompts someone to go from, this is a thing I like doing, a hobby, you know, of gaming, of meeting up with friends or going to the gaming store and whatever. And now I'm going to do it like publicly, and I'm going to do it for other people to consume. But hearing the why and kind of the journey of like where that switch flips for everyone is always like one of my favorite things. So yeah, for you, I guess, what kind of prompted you and what kind of drew you in to go bigger and go public as opposed to just like, this is the fun thing that I like to do?
Honestly, it was kind of when I met Mayday, because I'm a creative audio pro, so I work in film and television a lot, as well as work on like independent projects. So I'm not unfamiliar with working on things and like putting it out in the world. But when I first kind of got into like tabletop, I was in a point where I hadn't been doing creative projects on my own. I was doing stuff that I was working at a post house that I was in, kind of stopped doing indie projects for a while. So I was kind of in a space to be looking for something that I wanted to like put my creative energies into. When I had met Mayday, I was only initially coming on to just edit the project. But through the divine presence of having to deal with a person who kind of was a part of the starting process of it, having to kind of remove that individual and then redo the things, everybody wanted me to kind of be a part of the playing process. And so when we started Doom to Repeat, I ended up building a character and just kind of jumping in. And I think what really kind of starts that off was just having a table of people that like trust me enough and I trusted them enough to be able to kind of jump in there and be comfortable. Because like anytime I've done creative stuff, I've always been like a tech person or somebody right. in the background. Yeah. I live and thrive in the technical creatives. So I don't have to be seen. I don't want to be perceived. That's not my thing. But like being able to be trusted enough or have the trust to be able to be kind of a little bit forward kind of brought this level of confidence for me to be able to be in the spotlight, I guess, when it comes to like doing public performing and things like that. So now I'm kind of on this journey of being like more comfortable with being present and being able to be on streams and show my face and do those kinds of stuff and play any kind of game. So that's kind of what it is.
So originally, the Mayday kind of like story is very interesting where, and we won't go too much into the detail because I know that you were not there for the kind of early formation of it. I guess kind of first of all, not just how did you kind of hear about it and how did you kind of get connected to that as an opportunity, but what about editing and producing for tabletop stuff was kind of interesting to you? Was there something about tabletop as a medium that was particularly interesting to you? Or you're just like, I like tabletop games. I like editing. Wait, I can smash these together. Sick. Let's do that.
I think a lot of it was kind of creative freedom. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, in the other realms of creativity that I do, I get some freedom, but like not absolute freedom.
Sure.
Whereas working with everybody at Mayday, I can just be like, I have an idea for what I want to do for this. And they're just like, go. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like throw samples at them. Do you like this? And they're just like, holy shit, you know, those kinds of things. So like, that's one of the things that interested me the most was having complete creative freedom to be able to like try things, take a vision to its completion without having somebody say, well, nah, that's not what I want, or nah, I don't want this. So that was a lot of what kind of interests me. I also like the idea of being able to build things without having a visual element to it.
Yeah.
So you're using audio as a way to build a visual alongside the narrative explanation of how to do things like mm-hmm. that. That was just something that I found super stimulating and wanted to kind of explore how I can not only support a narrative, but like create something around it that people can feel and explore around the same things that our players are experiencing at the same time. It was just like a really unique opportunity to play in a space utilizing my skill set.
Something I always love talking about is for groups like your guys that have been around for a long time, again, at 5-ish years, give or take, and I think have either been exactly the same or largely the same group of people for that entire time feels miraculous sometimes, you know, where it's like you all came in as strangers or some amount of kind of strangers, at least for some of you guys, mm-hmm. and you guys have figured it out and have continued kicking ass and putting out lots of stuff for the whole time. I think like I don't
more or less,
at least in my memory, I don't remember too many times where there has been no Mayday thing going on.
Yeah.
What has that relationship kind of looked like for you guys? Or like, what's the vibe of it that has been so appealing and so sustainable over the last couple of years, at least for you, and why you enjoy still being there, still editing, still performing with these group of folks?
I think one of the perks of our group is that everybody more or less is a creative professional.
Definitely.
So they've acted, they've done crew work, all manners of production to post-production. So I think one thing that really makes us a solid team is that we have an understanding of what our goals and our intentions are, and we're working towards that goal and our intentions. Everything else can be worked out as things go. Because at the end of the day, you know, with people, you know, you're always going to have to deal with disagreements, concerns, and questions and stuff like that. But it's just how we're able to navigate. And one of the joys of working with everybody is that we're able to come to the table, talk about the things that we need to talk about, make compromises where we think is best, also having that just general trust that we all are making decisions together with a goal in mind. And how do we make those adjustments as we go? And it just comes down to having that attitude that being in creative professional environments demands of you. Because a lot of times in a lot of creative professional environments, especially like for me and working in post houses and stuff like that, where you got to do stuff on the fly, you got to make decisions, you got to trust people in the roles that they're allocated to. And we're going to come together to make a final product. And we've been able to more or less continue to achieve that, you know? And when things feel off or we have concerns or stuff like that, we're willing to make the time to sit down, like we'll stop what we're doing, we'll have the conversations we need to have to. And then once we all have a decision together in mind, we move forward together, because none of us intend to ever go ahead of each other. No decisions get made without consultation of the rest of the group. And that's, I think, makes this doable in the for a long-term situation. I've definitely been in a lot of situations where that doesn't happen. And then as much as I get excited for a project, it eventually will drop, because if I don't feel safe to create, my creation comes from my moods and my emotions. So if I don't feel like I'm being like appreciated or respected, or nobody, you know, all of those kinds of things that kind of put a damper on creativity, once that kind of sets in, it's hard to kind of break those things. But so far, for the last 5 years that I've worked in and gotten to play with everybody at Mayday, I've never had that kind of question.
So for you, at least, what does that look like, you know, kind of not just even kind of stylistically or as part of the whole group, but for you, like, how do you like to bring ideas you're excited about, I guess, to the group? And how do you try to balance your enthusiasm and passion with these like half dozen other people here who maybe also have ideas of what works, what might not work, what is interesting, what is blah, blah, blah? You know, like, how do you balance your joy with the practical process of feedback and collaboration, I guess, if that all makes sense?
I think it's just building a space in which you can be excited for it with the expectation that things will be tailored as we go. And I think that's just the space that we've kind of been able to build, where somebody would be like, yo, I just read this awesome TTRPG and I got ideas and I got thoughts and I want to make something. For instance, in October, I decided to run Games of Ghostfy, which is a game that I wrote.
And we will be talking about.
But, you know, that was kind of like a little bit of a last minute thing, because there was things that I wanted to many different things outside of playing the game that I wanted to accomplish, because I'm trying to expand a little bit of roles in what I do in the production side of things. Because I have a rig now that I can run OBS now. So now that I can run OBS, there's no stopping me now.
Exactly.
But it's just being able to like, okay, you have an idea. Awesome. Now let's talk about your needs. You know, and we have also built documentation as well, that somebody can be like, here's my idea, but here's also like my production needs. I need somebody to help me run OBS. I need this X amount of players to make this possible. So we kind of have two expectations on there, the creative expectation and the logistic expectation. I think one of the bigger things with this kind of stuff, it's more of like in improv where you're just like always yes and. The idea is always yes, and now what do we need to do to make that possible? You know, and how do we fit it in to meet everything so that we can get it done? All of us kind of also thrive, like me, in the technical production side of stuff. So scheduling things is not mind numbing. It's interesting. I do that a lot. I love hurdling cats, you know, because we've definitely gotten into situations like in life where it was just like, oh, well, shit, we can't stream our game on Saturday. I was like, all right, I'm not going to waste time like going like, oh, man, that sucks. My question is, all right, when are we free next to do this? You know, here are 5 dates, blah, 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 blah.
Which makes you a superhero, just to be just, you know, in case people don't tell you that enough, that makes you an angelic being sent to make people's lives a little bit better. So we kind of gave the umbrella classification of Mayday stories being sad boy stories. you know, no matter what system, there is a sad boy core to the vast majority of what you guys do. And again, that makes it wonderful. But for you specifically, what are the Eli stories? And whether that is kind of within the context of May Day, whether it's kind of just a universal, these are the things that I'm interested in exploring. What is it just now that you've been telling tabletop stories for 5 years, what do those look like?
I mean, for me as like a player, it comes down to like learning about what the core themes of a game is meant to do. Mm-hmm. And then trying to find, you know, something in there that moves me, or like also connecting myself to a story. Because I think at the end of the day, when you make characters as players, they're always going to be some form of an extension of yourself that you're trying to kind of work in to kind of telling a story. So like, you know, like Niles, for instance, in our Vegas by Night story, that's a little bit of me trying to work through like the feelings of loneliness and all those kinds of stuff that I have, because I feel like that's a really big part of being a kindred in general, is dealing with these big levels of loneliness that grows the longer you've survived as mm-hmm. a kindred. You know, Hyde is kind of working through like things about family and trying to kind of atoning for something that they were responsible for. All of those things are just kind of extensions for me. But when it comes to GMing, it's more or less about looking at the players and the characters that they have and trying to shape like a world around them. For like Precious Cargo, for instance, I mean, I built the world out to have an opportunity for people to kind of explore an expansive world. Yeah, there are definitely themes in there, because a lot of Ashoka is about colonization and westernization mm-hmm. and those kinds of impacts and things like that, but also how characters resonate with that. I, as a GM, are just generally fascinated by characters and players and how they want to express that. So I'm more of like, how do I set up things? Oh, you got backstory? Because, you know, because at the end of the day, like everybody, especially at Mayday and stuff like that, they're so role play heavy. They're so willing to jump in and embody their characters and have these really amazing conversations. And that's what kind of gives a little added substance, I guess, to it.
I'm glad you said that, because I think that really crystallizes something that I had not been able to kind of put full words around. But definitely any time I have played with someone from Mayday, you very much included, but there has always been that element of like, there might be a fight, right? Or there might be that little bit of like, my character doesn't like your character.
Yeah.
And exactly. Obviously I human being to human being, we like each other and we're having a good time, but like, that might not happen, or this, you might be annoying to me, or I might be like, I'm going to make a suboptimal decision that kind of screws other people because the positive version of that's what my character would do and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And you guys are all collectively, again, at least from my limited experience, really, really good at finding those narratively appropriate ways to do that, but also always being cool about it, you yeah. know, is like always being like, this comes from, oh, hey, this is interesting. And this occurred to me. And you seem like someone who might be willing to get in the mud with me and figure out this like hell weird yeah. human interaction together. And so like, let's do this together. So I think that's certainly a big strength for you guys, and something that certainly fits a lot to your sad boy story archetype, I guess, is that sad boys must be sad at each other.
Hell yeah. Or serious fun. That's also right. something we like to call. We like to have serious fun. Because we're willing to cry with each other, you know. We're willing to explore all range of emotions,
yes.
and even some of our more sillier characters that we have can have these moments of where we're getting into the mud, like you said. And yeah, and again, that just comes from, you know, absolute complete trust. I say trust, like I've been saying like trust like five or six times, but
again, think, if you don't have trust making art together, then like you can't do anything. That's
exactly,
that
exactly. Exactly.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Hi, it's me, Sophie. Do you want more Reckless Attack? Then join our Discord and chat with us and our community. The link for the Discord is in the show notes, or head on over to our website, recklessattack.com. We also have a Patreon. You can listen to our new show, Reckless Snack, and other content if you become a patron. We really appreciate your support, and thank you for listening to the episode.
Both certainly as a big part of your role at Mayday and just kind of, I don't know, generally professionally in life is a lot of audio editing, audio engineering, that sort of deal. And in this space, especially kind of at our level, everyone's doing it themselves or at very small scales, you know, maybe paying an editor or a small freelancer, that kind of deal sometimes. But a lot of people are self-taught. A lot of people are just kind of doing great work, but doing work that they have kind of come to themselves. Whereas this was your whole ass career and job and what you went to school for and all that kind of stuff. So mostly, first of all, I'm really interested in what about audio design and audio editing and sound design and stuff? What kind of pulled you in to begin with? Like, why was that something that was so interesting to you that you, again, went to school for it and have made it into both your career and what you do in your, like, hobby, side hustle, whatever, however you want to identify it kind of space?
I guess I was fortunate enough in my like time in like high school, kind of finding something that I was interested in, and then just been lucky enough to continue to explore it and have the opportunities to build the skill and do all of that. It really came down to like DVD extras, which, you know, RIP DVD extras. We miss them. We love them. but, you know, some of those DVD extras showed like the processes of doing sound, like doing Foley and those things where you're watching some guy step on a bag of rice and that's like somebody's footsteps in snow. And I was really fascinated about that. And I was also in the same time when I got interested in that, joined the community theater and got into tech work and was doing live sound for shows at the community theater.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But I had decided to finally go to the school for it after I graduated from high school. And then I got into like all the facets of audio production. And while I can do it, I can do more or less everything from like music recording to live sound reinforcement, basic electronics, stuff like that. I just really loved doing post-production for film and TV. I like the process. I think for me, ultimately, sound is just a really unique medium to play in, you know, kind of like how you paint paintings. You know, there are different kinds of tools you can use to express your creativity. And I found that sound was a really interesting way to kind of shape and tailor people's emotions to things. And it's the job of a sound designer and an editor to be able to pluck at those feelings using sound. And I enjoy doing that.
which sounds
weird and wild, but you know, in my professional career, I don't do a lot of creative editing like that, but you know, I get those opportunities in the independent projects that I get to work on. But I still find that kind of stuff in the things that I do. I think even more so with actual play stuff, the level of detail that you can put into it just allows the audience to remain there present for the whole time without thinking about other things. Especially when you have runtimes on shows that are just as long as a movie. Mm-hmm. How do you keep people engaged with what you're doing the whole time? And that's ultimately kind of how I kind of view doing all things audio. Is just,
definitely.
I'm just very fascinated with these little minute, tedious things that people will and will not respond
to. Yes, for sure. Something I think you guys do a really good job of is you do have a lot of sound design, but it always feels very natural. There are a lot of highly produced shows that whose sound effects take me out of it, right? And you guys balance it really well. And by you guys, I mostly mean you, obviously. And something that we haven't really talked about was listening to actual plays, or like, did you consume a lot of actual play content before starting to be the editor for Mayday? Or were you just kind of operating really from like, I know how things sound And I do it in TV and movies, and I can kind of bring that same level of experience and that same vibe over here.
Honestly, it's a lot of the latter. I mm-hmm. didn't really listen to anybody's project. Of course, Critical Role is always going to be something that when I was like starting out, trying to figure out how to play TTRPGs, I definitely was like over there, but they're not doing any of that stuff.
No,
but
right.
To be honest, I was not listening to other people's things before I got into it. I just had a vision, an idea for how I wanted things. Once the episode got stitched together and I had like what the product was going to be for that episode, it's a lot of it is just me like going, all right, well, how does that kind of sound like, you know?
Yeah.
For me, I never had to go and listen to somebody else to be able to find the inspiration
right.
that I needed. I just focus on what everybody brought in performance-wise and then figure out how to sweeten it, essentially.
A quick process question. It just kind of struck me. When you're kind of sitting down to sound design an episode and kind of shape what that looks like and feels like, do you take it pretty much scene by scene where it's like, ah, yes. Okay, cool. We are inside a library. Great. What does a library sound like? Do you kind of do it in those chunks? Do you look at kind of the whole episode or do you look at the whole episode and say, okay, there's indoor scenes and there's outdoor scenes. That means I need to be intentional about making this sound different over here. Mm-hmm. How do you as an experienced professional look at something like a whole episode of something?
For me, when I get the stitch, because fortunately enough, others on the team have been gracious enough to support me on this by editing the content down.
Cool. Yeah.
You know, so that helps me a lot. I mean, I go through the dialogue and process it in the way that I want to, but we at least know that most of the ums and ahs are out.
Yep.
There's always going to be banter no matter what you get, but like trying to shape the content to how we want it to sound. But for me, like the starting of my process is listening to the whole episode and I'm dropping like markers on my timeline of mm-hmm. like, this is the sound effects I want to, you know, if I hear somebody do an action, especially like combat and stuff like that, I'm dropping a marker of those kinds of basic stuff. You know, someone's pulling out a gun. I'm going to make sure that gun sound is going off and stuff like that. Luckily enough, also in the contributions of the rough edit, folks have been able to at least drop markers of where locations are changing.
Cool.
So at least have that stuff in general. But I listen to the episode and I start just kind of place marking things that I need to go, especially because outside of sound effects, there's also music involved. And I'm music editor as well. So sometimes I'm dropping markers to say, I need music to change here. I need music to change here mm-hmm. so that when I'm editing the music, I'm making sure that I'm hitting those beats when it happens. So I definitely try to pre-plan as much as I can, fill in the obvious things that are going to be there, like the sound of certain sound effects. And then as I go, I start mapping the emotional drives through the sound design and stuff like that. And then at the end of the day, even throughout all of that, when I start mixing things down and shaping things, I'm definitely still replacing sound effects. I'll definitely replace I'll definitely replace music as I go. And then once I have a pressing deadline, when it's like when it's like due tomorrow, and I'm just like fuck.
All right, fine, export.
I got to commit to it, commit to the bit and just make it kind of work throughout that. But again, it's a maddening process for me. Some days when I sit down to edit and I start going through it, I realize that I'm not inspired to work on it.
Yeah.
And I give myself the grace to step away from the project instead of worrying about the deadline, which has been a big luxury, especially in this past season when we decided to stop releasing once a week. Mm-hmm. Because it was destroying my life mm-hmm. and everybody else's life doing that. And we opted to a monthly release so that we can have the room to breathe. And doing that was a little bit more rewarding because I had the grace to be able to say, I'm not going to be able to do this today.
And again, listen, professional editor here saying sometimes it's okay just to not feel it and to walk away.
Yeah.
Remember fellow people who edit things.
Listen, and it's not even for audio editing.
Yeah.
It's in all that you do. Creativity is a process and it's a hard process. And not everybody can be creative in the way that we seek professional creativity. So give yourself grace, give yourself space to not only grow your stuff, but to be kind to yourself in the creative process, because that's always super important that you give yourself the space, because you're not going to be able to play every day. And that's OK. don't let it ruin you.
Hell yes. Beautiful. Well said. So something that, you know, kind of from your experience, and you've talked so wonderfully about different ways of creating art. Maybe there's two different questions, and maybe one is better than the other one. But kind of the first question is, what have you learned from the television and movie, you know, professional world that is not just beneficial for you, but might be beneficial for other people, whether that's audio editing, whether that's process, whether that's whatever. But also, what ways have you as a professional and an experienced person had to adjust to the different medium of actual play, especially when sometimes it's audio only, sometimes it's audio and visual, sometimes it's a visual product? How have you kind of, or have you had to chameleon your way into, well, I have the skills, but I'm applying them in slightly different ways because it's a different medium?
My skill set in like professional creative work just kind of gave me the structure to be kind of able to apply it to this kind of thing that we're doing in actual play, because, you know, honestly, actual plays is kind of like the Wild Wild West right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are ranging from different kinds of skill sets, different kinds of backgrounds and stuff like that. They're figuring out things as they kind of go, which is first of all, bad and good. But the good thing is that we're doing. Right. And I say that for a lot of people, you know, people always give me that advice. It's like, how do you start off doing your creative stuff? You just do. That's always going to be a part of the creative process, is having the courage to do. Also, one thing that's also important is, what is your like long term goals for this?
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that I think that there's a lot of constant debate about the hobby aspect of this versus the creative professional side of it, where some people want this to be their life goal. They want to be creating like this all the time.
Right.
And some people just want to create for the sake of creating. But if you don't have that goal in mind, it makes the process harder. It's better for you to spend time sitting down for a month or two even to kind of figure out that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we love jumping in. You know, as I said before, having an idea and putting it out there, fantastic. But make sure that you're spending the time to sort out the logistics of it, so that once you start creating, you're not running into those problems later, or at least you have an idea of how you're going to handle those things when they come up as you go, because it'll benefit your momentum as you go, because sometimes those kinds of things will be momentum killers and you don't want to lose the momentum, especially for the creative parts of it. It happens in professional settings too. There's so many situations in which we have to reevaluate how we're going to approach a situation to make sure that we're not only meeting deadlines, but we're doing it with quality in mind.
Yeah.
And that takes time, that takes processes, that takes pivoting where pivots have to be taken. None of that is a flaw of your character or any of that stuff. It's just a part of the process. Give yourself the grace to identify that this isn't working. What do I do now?
Yep, I agree with that.
You know, lean on the expertise of your peers who are experiencing the same experiences. Build a community for yourself, a resource for yourself to be able to get information from others who might be at your same experience level, who are above your experience level. And then at the end of the day, contribute to that by helping those who might be below your level of experience, because we've grown a lot since 2020 when we really kind of kicked all of this stuff off, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. We have new people coming into the space who want to take a stab at this stuff, and we're not going to improve this process if we aren't collaborating outside of our tables.
I think that was beautifully stated and agreed wholeheartedly. Something that gets talked a lot about in the tabletop space, and I choose the word space knowingly based off of what we're about to talk about, is the idea of forming a community or forming community, etc. I think it's been really interesting across the years that I know I've been in it and that you have been in is kind of the way that public dialogue and perception around those sorts of terms has changed and been more critical in a good way. We're like really examining what those things mean and what they shouldn't mean, maybe. Mm-hmm. And you are someone who talks a lot about that sort of thing a lot in a way that is really admirable and wonderful and is always like destination reading for me. Most of the time, oh, long tweet, it's too much to read, no thanks. Is there like a TLDR of these 160 characters mm-hmm. or whatever? Oh, Eli's talking. All right, yeah, I'll pause. I'll read this entire tweet. I will maybe even stop and think about mm-hmm. things. And that is maybe the highest compliment one can offer of someone posting on social media. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, I think it would be remiss, at least for me, to not talk to you a little bit about that concept generally. To you, what does the word or phrase or idea of community mean to you?
You know, ultimately, I really think that community is a very multifaceted term, and it kind of ends up being defined depending on who you are and depending on the structure in which you build community. You know, ultimately, community is intended to be, you know, a group of individuals who may have varying ideas of how things should be done or, you know, points of views working together to achieve a common goal and kind of utilizing everybody's strengths and supporting everybody's weaknesses to achieve that goal. And I think that's why, like, ultimately, you know, you and I have been in the space for a while. We've discovered that on a grand scheme of things, when there's so many of our peers in the space together, that's kind of hard for us to call this community. Mm-hmm. It's just too broad for it.
Yeah.
And we can't be able to really cover everybody's thing. So it's about multiple smaller communities working together. Because at the end of the day, when we treat every single person as a family, which for many who are going to be sad about that, I really do not like to call this space a family at all.
No,
we've been through that time when we were doing that. We saw the consequences of what happened when that, you know, because it allows some of the negative aspects of being in a social setting with human beings because. Some people are just don't have the greatest of intentions at the end of the day when it comes to that.
Sure.
And family sometimes, in my opinion, is used in a way that allows people to act and behave poorly. And we are all supposed to just tolerate it in the way that we kind of have to navigate our family spaces. Because I know for many of us, family spaces can be a very turmoil kind of setting that many of us are very unsure of how to properly navigate it. And sometimes we have to tolerate things that we might not necessarily want to tolerate from either strangers on the internet that we've met or from the people that we end up doing collaborative work with. When you frame it a little bit more into spaces or into community, it just kind of makes it a little bit better. So for me, yeah, that's ultimately what community kind of means to me is you have a handful of people that you congregate with, mm-hmm. you all have a goal or something in mind, and you guys work together to strengthen each other, to utilize those strengths in a good way, to meet whatever needs or goals that you are ultimately working towards. And I think that's what I think I value when it comes to building community in general.
Is that something that you guys at May Day have kind of explicitly stated as a goal, you know, kind of be in community with one another or be in community with the people who are responding to your art, the people who are joining in and kind of contributing here and there, that sort of thing? Or is that just kind of reflective of the process and values that you guys have, if that distinction makes sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we've established that we are of a community kind of base, which kind of allows us to be able to create freely and be able to kind of share these ideas with all of us still having our individual lives and us still kind of doing stuff like that. And I think the best part about our community that we have together is that we're willing to do the hard work of communication that comes with being in community, that we can be in disagreement with each other, that we can have those hard conversations when we need to have those hard conversations and be able to work together to, ratify any issues that come up, because no matter what you do, there's always going to be disagreements here and there with people. That just happens. It's inevitable, essentially. But how you work on that kind of stuff, you know, taking time to stop down what we're working on so that we can have as many communication meetings that we might need to have in order to kind of resolve an issue, put boundaries and things in place that need to be reinforced, you know, and then it comes down to the actions that we take after mm-hmm. we have those communications to kind of solidify that. But we at least have put in the foundations and the structure we might need to make adjustments as new things kind of pop up as we continue on this journey. That's kind of what I reflect on a lot when I talk about like community space, is that I've been able to find a group of people who are willing to do that work with me, which is fucking amazing. Yeah. And I would love for other people to try to strive to do that for themselves, for whatever community or whatever group they've worked together in. Because like being friends sometimes is just not enough, you know, when it comes to, especially when you're doing creative, collaborative work like this. Being friends is great because it allows fluidity in a lot of places. But like, can you have hard conversations with your friends, you know?
Right.
And some people can't. Mm-hmm. Some people just like to have all the joys that come with being in friendship, but are afraid to tackle the hard stuff that comes with being a friend, you know? And I find that is not the case with Mayday. And I think that's also a part of like some of the things that makes us continue on this for as long as we mm-hmm. want. Because even at the end of the day, when we're in disagreement, we all look at each other and go, well, we still want to do this. You know, we still want to create with each other. We still want to make something work. So what do we got to do to make the adjustments that are necessary for everybody to feel comfortable enough to continue to do this together?
This is maybe a silly question, but what happens when you don't feel the energy to do that? That's a lot of work, right? Is like
totally.
The work of community is hard work and takes energy and takes vulnerability and takes compromise and an active pursuit of seeing the other person's perspective. And it's hard to do, and it's hard to do well. And is that something that you find that you kind of like struggle with, I guess, either struggle to find the energy, the motivation, or is it just that, no, I care about this, and therefore eventually I will find the space to engage with it?
I think it's a little bit about both, because, you know, as mm-hmm. much as community is a collaborative thing, as I say, community also starts with yourself as a human being. Yeah. So having the energy from it or not finding the energy from it really comes down to then trying to self-evaluate your needs in the situation. That might require you taking some time away from the situation in order for you to kind of do that. But you know, I there's definitely times where I've definitely felt bummed out or sad or like just like, fuck this. I don't have the spoons to I'm out of spell slots. I can't make this work. But that's an indication for me to be able to stop down on what I'm doing and evaluate what I need out of the situation, take the time I need. Mm-hmm. And when I'm ready, try to find the means to get back into being an active participant in that. And I think that's also a thing that has to be considered when you are in a community, that sure, active work is important, but how do we support each other during those passive times? Something you might have to reevaluate for yourself too, is like, if you don't have the energy to do that and your community can't support you in those kinds of times, and they're only here to support you when things are great and all that stuff, that's something to consider of what you really need out of the spaces mm-hmm. that you're engaging with.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think it's one of those things that like seems so obvious, right? Like saying it out loud, but being able to do it and having this space and community and shared values and friendship and whatever else is a whole other thing.
Totally.
Lovely to hear that it exists for you and in the world and over at Mayday. You just spoke very beautifully about the power of coming to a group of people who care about you with a personal problem, with a professional problem, and working hard to cultivate a space where that is allowed and is safe and is encouraged and makes everybody stronger and better, hopefully, at the end of it. But one of the things that I think you are so amazing at is doing that out into the world in the dregs of the internet, where you are someone who is incredibly brave and strong and insightful in pointing out problems, injustice, things like, hey, I don't think we should use the term family anymore. You know, all of that sort of thing, or just diversity in casting, diversity in perspective, a lot of like, hey, why are we doing this? It's one thing to do that with a group of friends who you trust and who you are able to be an imperfect messenger of hard truths to, but then to do it calling out injustice to the world and kind of like putting yourself in the spotlight and in the crosshairs to a certain extent is the opposite. It feels like, to me at least, the opposite of that. First, I just want to again just like say aloud here on air, on record, that you are amazing and the space is better for having you in it. But also, I want to just kind of talk about that as a necessary part of existence in a space and community and whatnot. So I guess just kind of first, is that an instinct that you kind of just naturally have where it's like that is just who you are as a person? Or is that something that kind of over the course of your life you have cultivated, worked on, found necessary, what have you?
I think it's more the latter. I think this is something that I had to cultivate over time. I've been kind of very lucky being, you know, Native Hawaiian, growing up in Hawaii. I was taught a lot of these critical values in which we kind of stand on. But I was definitely a person, as I was growing up, that didn't feel like they had a voice, or especially a voice that mattered. But then when I had to move away from Hawaii, and I've been living in California now, I've had to be kind of on my own for a lot of it. So I've had to kind of learn to kind of utilize my voice and how I want to see the world or how I want things to kind of be. And I've always been like an internet kid also at the same time, because when you're just like lonely as a child and then you have unsupervised internet access, you kind of build yourself on there. So kind of like I said, I'm a little bit more more confident to say things when I'm safe in my room.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, versus like public speaking is difficult, you know, at the end of the day. But I've had to cultivate this voice for myself, and also being Indigenous, a person of color, you know, and also being, you know, white passing at the same time, you know, I have over the years have had to reevaluate how I can be a better advocate for the things that I'm looking for, or also support the voices of others who are speaking as loud, but are not being received because of whatever XYZ excuse you want to put into the reason why they shouldn't be heard. Even some of the things that I write on, I have written in terms of like trying to build this space up to be as great as it can be, came from the collective sounds of other people who are also speaking up for the same things and trying to be an advocate for those vocal paths, because I think they're equally as important for not just me to say something, but for others to resound for the others who are also advocating for similar stuff. So yeah, it was just something that kind of had to be developed over time, and then being grateful enough for people to like see all the things that I write and then, you know, either resonate with it and agree to it, or even just take the time to listen to the things I say, because I know I could get really long-winded on some of those stuff.
Not particularly. You're good.
But I just found that it was just kind of important to say it, because we can all like, we can all look at each other on the side and all kind of come to the same, like, yeah, I think we should do that. But like, someone still has to vocalize it. It still has to become said so that it can be put into actuality, so that people can kind of reevaluate these things. If I can't change the whole space, I can at least make one or two people reconsider what they're doing for themselves. And that can also be enough at the end of it. You know, I definitely believe that marginalized voices should have a much more critical place in the space, especially for the history of TTRPG and gaming,
yeah,
for what it is. Also, at the same time, not just like for those interpersonal critical issues that we need to talk about, people are so amazing in general. People have such a unique perspective on the world, you know, and mm-hmm. we lose out on good storytelling and good ideas when we don't have an opportunity to give space to those who might bring a unique perspective to something.
I love that. I think especially that confidence in self is so powerful. And I think so evident with you and a great number of other people who I admire, who are willing to pitch in and do that sort of work. So I guess I'll just say, hey, if you're listening, find people who are, you know, fighting for inclusivity in the space and progressiveness and all those sort of things. And then just go interact with it and say, hey, that sounds good, or boost it, or do whatever. But listen to people who have cool and good opinions and boost the cool and good people who are making them. Eli, I've had a really great time. This is a conversation that I've been, and I've told you this a zillion times in the lead up to it, that I've been wanting to do for forever and have just been kind of like waiting so that I was ready to interview you, right? That was the only roadblock, was like, when am I worthy to talk to Eli? And I'm so happy and joyous that I have leveled up enough and gotten to glimpse the sunshine of your excellence. But unfortunately, our relationship, forged here across this interview, as well as forged across social media posts, various games, other such nonsense, it has to go from, I would say, you know, congenial, respectful, collaborative into, I won't say combative, but more, I am now a fire that you must walk through to determine how worthy you are as a Reckless Atalk mm-hmm. guest.
Okay.
Because it is time for the Reckless Atalk lightning round.
Hell yeah.
Now, for you and for any of our listeners who are not familiar, the Reckless Atalk lightning round, they are the same questions we ask to every single one of our guests in the exact same order. There are no wrong answers to these questions, other than, I like to say, lying, just because that's like lame. It's not fun. Your answer can be as long-winded as you so choose. If you're like, ah, yes, this reminds me of an excerpt from this novel I read recently, allow me to read a few chapters from it. As long as it is poignant and makes sense, I'm mm-hmm. with you. Or it can be one word delivered with weight and power, or it can be, you know, I don't have a good answer. Move on to the next one. No matter what, I will look at you. I will nod sagely. Yes. Interesting. Interesting. And we'll move on to the next one. Eli, are you ready for the Reckless Talk lightning round?
Yeah, let's do this. Hell yeah.
Okay. I appreciate the confidence. We shall see if your spirit is sturdy enough for what is about to come. First question. Is your glass half full or half empty?
I would say half empty, but half empty in a way that there is room to fill the cup versus saying that that's it for what's in the cup.
What excites you creatively, spiritually, and or emotionally?
I think what excites me most would probably be, I guess, in this instance, people. People are very, people excite me, especially when they bring their honest creativity, spiritual, mm-hmm. emotional selves to the table. I find myself extremely resonant of that and get very, very excited over it when I see that, because it's just a fun thing to just sit there and go, ah, that's beautiful. You're a beautiful person. And I think that excites me the most.
What does not excite you creatively, spiritually, and or emotionally?
I think the lack of flexibility kind of doesn't excite me. I think when everything is so rigid and there's not room to color outside the lines every now and again, to make something that I'm very disinterested on it. I'm definitely not a rules follower for the most part, or I'm willing to at least learn the rules so that I can learn how to break the rules. So inflexibility kind of stifles all of that opportunity of what could be if you just allowed other perspectives and things inside the box to carry you on.
What is your favorite sound?
That is a hard question to ask.
It's always fun to ask this question to like audio people, because either they're like, I know in immediately, or it's like, well, let me think about every sound.
Yeah, right. I'm thinking of like all the sounds in the world. I would say tension pads might be the thing that excites me the most. I think it's just these low end resonant sounds that kind of start making your heart beat a little faster and make you sweat a little bit, where it kind of starts making you lean a little bit into your seat as you're listening to something, going like, what is that? You know, especially in instances where it's like a very neutral setting kind of situation, where you're just describing maybe like just an outdoor space and it looks all nice and flowy or whatever. But then there's tension in the background and you're like, why? Why is the bad boss music playing in this beautiful space right now? I'm very concerned. Mm-hmm. I think that's my favorite, because I think it's really the shift in emotional drives that gets me.
What sound do you hate?
The sound of breaking bones. Which is funny, because I spent a lot of time putting breaking bones stuff in there. But if I do it in a way that makes me feel uncomfortable, I'm just like, that's so bad. I don't like seeing that on screen when you get those moments where like bones being broken. But just the sound of it too, that very extra crunchiness that you do breaking vegetables in front of a mic, that just like irritates my sound mind. But yeah, probably my least favorite thing.
What is your favorite word?
Right now, I would say that my favorite word is a mixed word. It's called shenanery.
Go on.
I know that's probably, I mispronounced it, but I forget even the two words that combine into that, shenanigan and
chicanery, maybe?
Something like that. But I feel like it's the perfect word to explain controlled chaos that is always inevitable, especially when I'm playing with like folks at Mayday. We're always up for some shenanery business, because it's going to be chaotic. It's going to be messy, but it's going to work out in the end.
What is your least favorite word?
I don't know. I don't think I have one. Nothing comes to mind. Outside of like just being shitty and derogatory, you know.
Yep.
Those are the only words that are, you know, if you're being mean and you,
mean words. I would say that can count as your least favorite word.
Even if they're not like swear words and stuff like that, if you're using words for the intentions of being a shitty person, then I want none of it.
Yeah, I kind of love that answer. I mean, and I have neutral responses to that. Yes. Sage. Yes. What tabletop role-playing game, D&D, etc., monster or antagonist have you never faced or run that you'd love to?
Ooh, that's hard, because I feel like I've ran and dealt with like a lot of monsters. I would say maybe more of a shoe on the other foot kind of situation. There was that maybe I need to face a monster that I made for my own party this one time. I feel like in the beginning of all of our GM careers, there's occasions where you slightly start to dabble in altering stats and doing things that you think might be fun and interesting, and then you accidentally almost TPK your players. So I think it would only be fair to face some of those monsters that I have, but predominantly a roper that I made aquatic.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, in a dungeon where you kind of had to move water around. And then when the two water breathing members of your party went ahead to pull levers to make that water shift, and the rest of the party was dealing with a roper that was pulling them into water. I feel like I have to eventually face the demon in which I made. So I think that's what I need to ultimately face. I need to face this terrible Roper that I made and almost accidentally killed my party.
What is your favorite adventure of all time? And this can be one you read, one you played, one you ran. It can be one you watched or listened to. It can be 1999's The Mummy. Whatever speaks to you.
You know, I want to say, like, I could easily say, like, Jurassic Park, because that would be fun. I could easily say, you know, Twister, because that's also one of my favorite ones. But I want to say Treasure Planet.
Ooh.
From Disney.
I think that's been said before. I'm not 100% sure, but it's come up on Reckless to Talk. I know for sure.
God, that was such a good show in general. Like space fantasy pirates kind of situation. A bunch of just aliens, just like cool fucking hover skateboards. Such a fascinating world that never ever got a sequel or any of that stuff, but it should have. I feel like that would be such a cool adventure to take on throughout that. For sure.
What is your favorite tabletop role-playing game character of all time? Similarly, it can be one that you've played, one you've played alongside an NPC from an adventure you wrote, something you have read or watched or listened to, etc.
I could, on one hand, you know, for like Mayday purposes, probably Hyde from our Doom to Repeat series was probably one of my favorite characters I've gotten to play. Just kind of taking yourself out of the fantasy realm of things to be able to explore that. But I want to say ultimately my favorite character right now is this cowboy Kenku that I've made that I sprinkle everywhere in all of my TTRPG stuff. His name is Shotgun Rack, just the sound of a shotgun racking. And he's a gunslinger. He's a gunslinger Kenku with a cowboy hat and a big old duster and two nine irons on his hip. And when he walks, he makes the sound of spurs on cowboy boots. He's my favorite thing in the world. I love him so much. He's not the best at combat, though. With a gunslinger, with a gun, you can make those things work. But like outside of shooting, he's not the best guy. But he's the guy you need. And that's what matters the most. What you need.
Eli, last question. What gives you hope?
I want to say people give us hope. You know, we've talked a lot about community today. I've talked a lot about the people that I collaborate with. But, you know, when you like engage with that kind of stuff, you realize that people ultimately give you the most hope in the world, and community, you know, and making community with those kinds of people also kind of give you hope. Because at the end of the day, you have to have people in your corner. They have the keys to unlocking maybe the growth you need to find for yourself. And when everything kind of seems dark, you look for people to kind of resonate with you in the way that you feel, but also might, you know, help you move forward after you start kind of feeling those dark bits. So I think, people is the thing that gives me the most hope in the world.
Eli, you have made it to the end, not just of the Reckless to Talk lightning round, but of Reckless to Talk itself. Congratulations. Well done. Three cheers, if not more, to you and yours. As a reward, Eli, could you please remind everyone who you are, who you have been, who you will continue to be, how they can learn more about you, support you, all that good stuff?
Yeah. Well, again, my name is Eli. I go predominantly as a Ghost of Eli, which is where you can find me out in the universe, whether it be Instagram, the place formerly known as Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, wherever you get your social media,
what new social medias have cropped up in the days since this has been released
wherever,
to the world,
et cetera, wherever et cetera. You find it, wherever you go, I'm probably there. But I am ultimately the resident ghost of Mayday Roleplay. We are an AP content creation team out here making serious, fun, actual plays, whether it be through Delta Green, Vampire the Masquerade, Orbital Blues, 5e. We have well-polished shows where we add sound effects and all that good stuff, but also live stuff that we just kind of, you know, do it live. But when I'm not with Mayday Roleplay and I'm trolling around the social medias, I am also a game creator and developer. I've written a game called Ghostfy and a couple other silly games. I'm also a pro GM. You can find me on Start Playing, where I am currently running a West March campaign about kind of a dungeon meshy situation where we're out collecting ingredients for a culinary city. I'm doing all of that stuff. So if you're interested in supporting me and doing all those fine things, just find me on social media. You'll be able to kind of get the whole range of scope of the shenanigans that I am up to. But that's essentially me. Please check out Mayday Roleplay and then feel free to come hang out with me on the corners of the internet.
Eli, thank you so very much for being here.
Thank you so much. Bye.